Tonight I wanted to offer you some reflections on faith and devotion in this practice, on this path. Because to truly engage in meditation, not only meditation, but the other aspects of this path, we need to begin with some amount of trust, right? Just to begin to engage in something, you need to have some amount of trust that it's going to lead in some favorable direction. So tonight I want to speak about faith and devotion and exactly what that means. I think a lot of us many times have connotations, especially around the word faith, because of our, you know, because of the religious background that we have. And I think the idea of faith in Buddhism is quite different than the idea of faith in many other spiritual traditions and religious paths. So I want to make sure that we really understand the kind of the unique qualities that are found in the quality of faith on this path, you know, in this practice. I also want to speak about its role and its function, you know, in terms of not only meditation but other aspects of the path. So it's interesting, the Buddha really emphasizes a number of times the importance of faith. And you see that it really is, again, as I was saying, the beginning of the practice. You know, we begin with it, and then the more we practice, we can verify, you know, what we have faith in, and then we can come to see that it's actually true, and then our faith deepens and our practice deepens. And I'm sure many of you who have practiced have had that experience, right? You come to this practice because you're curious, you read about something, and then you get a taste of it, and then you realize, oh, there is something to this, and you practice more, and then you see more. And I'm going to be speaking more about this quality of faith in Buddhism because it is quite different than what you find in some other spiritual paths. Yeah, so the Buddha points this out. For example, he has one teaching. It's, you know, one of those many lists, right? There's all these lists in Buddhism. And one of those lists is the five spiritual faculties, which are these five states of mind, you could say, or five mental states that really support the unfolding of awakening. And the first one of those is faith. Again, it's incredibly important. And then for especially for those of you who are in the study group, you might have remembered, we studied a discourse in there called the Upanisa Sutta, which was this discourse by the Buddha where he's explaining the conditions, again, the conditions that help support this process of awakening. And once again, really, faith is one of those first conditions. So it's primary, it's foundational in regard to this path. I think the reason why I really want to speak about it tonight is that I'm finding that faith and devotion, and I'm using these terms interchangeably, you know, they're playing a bigger and bigger role in my practice. I think I'm getting to get more of a sense of really letting go in this practice, and what allows me to give myself over to the practice is having a deeper faith and deeper devotion to it. And one of the relieving things about having more faith, for me at least, is that I feel like I get to take more of me out of the equation. What a relief to really surrender to really this fluid quality that I feel the path has. So for me, it's really playing more and more of a central role. Yeah, so what is faith? The Pali word that's usually translated as faith is sadha, Pali being the scriptural language of early Buddhism. And it literally means to put one's heart into. It's the act of putting one's heart into something. So in a lot of ways, you can see faith is really, it's like falling in love, right? It's an emotional relationship, actually. That's really what it's about. It's this heart connection, this heart relationship with something. So it really is, it has this quality of the heart being moved, just like when you fall in love. You know, with faith, though, it really is this emotional relationship with what is ultimately true. Being deeply devoted to that which is profound and true. And I think also what it has, it's, I want to emphasize that it's really important that it has this heartfelt quality. Devotion must pierce the heart. I think that's another quality to it. So it really is like falling in love. And just like falling in love, what faith and devotion can carry with it is a lot of deluded projections. You ever notice that when you first fall in love? Man, this person is really going to make my life so happy. Right? You have these wonderful ideas about the person. And a lot of misconceptions about the relationship and the person, about where it's going to lead to. The same thing can happen with faith. A lot of times when we have faith in something, it can start out with this blindness to it, with these delusions. We can have those delusions around the practice. We fall in love with the practice and we feel like, oh, from now until the end of my life, if I do this practice, I'll just always feel good. Or that feeling of that something's missing in my life is going to go away. Or my life is going to be smoother. Again, these can be these deluded projections that we're bringing to the practice. That somehow the practice or this path is going to fix my personal problems. Maybe on some level, yes, but there still might be a projection that we're carrying along with it as we fall in love with this practice. And I want to point out, though, that the deluded quality, those projections, are not the essence of faith. It's not really what faith and devotion are about. It's what gets glommed onto it. Just as when the heart gets moved when one falls in love, that the heart being moved is different than the projections that we carry along with it. Actually, there's a poem by Rumi which really exemplifies this quality of falling in love, the projection that can be there, and then the wisdom that can arise when you stick with a spiritual practice. He says, "The minute I heard my first love story, I started looking for you, not knowing how blind that was. Lovers don't finally meet somewhere. They're in each other all along." Yeah, so do you hear that? There's this projection that he begins with. And then there's this deeper understanding, this deeper wisdom that arises out of his heart being moved. Another way that this word sadha is many times translated is it's translated as confidence. So I think that's another quality that you find in faith, at least in Buddhism. I remember many years ago I used to rock climb, and it was really interesting. When I felt really confident in my ability to climb, it would help so much with the climbing. There would be a fluidity to the climbing. And when I didn't, I mean, I would literally freeze up. There would be this frozen quality in my ability. And really, so it was really my confidence that allowed me the ability to move forward, to climb ahead. And I feel like it's the same thing on this path, in this practice. Really cultivating a sense of confidence, a confidence in this practice, a confidence in the Dharma. And the deeper our confidence, the deeper we can go into this practice. You know, and as I mentioned earlier, you know, one of the unique qualities of faith in Buddhism is how it's coupled together with getting an actual taste. You know, this path is really about engaging in the practice of meditation, engaging in ethical conduct. So as a result of that, it really doesn't have this quality of blind faith. You know, as I was speaking, there's this teaching, these five spiritual faculties, and one of them is faith. And the mental state that balances faith out is this quality of mind that's investigation or discernment. And both of these actually need to be in balance. If they're out of balance, then usually one's meditation and one's practice is out of balance. So I find that very fascinating. It's not something that we're merely believing in an idea. We're balancing it with our investigation. And for me, just in terms of this, and this is something to become curious about in your own practice or just your own personality. Now, for me, I've never actually had what I'd call a devotional type of personality. There are some people that are really attracted to devotional spiritual practices. And for me, I think one of the things that attracted me about Buddhism was the wisdom aspect, its clarity, the way it investigated reality. And it's been much later that I've really needed to and seen the importance of cultivating this devotional or faithful quality. And I've come to see how important it is to have that balance. And you might notice this within your own relationship to, you know, this spiritual path or to another spiritual path. if we're predominantly someone who really is very inquisitive and asks a lot of questions, has this quality of investigation or discernment, but not much faith, a lot of times what happens is we might read a lot of books or we're really curious, but there's really no movement on the path because we haven't devoted ourselves to actually engaging in the practice. And when we do, still the questions can be so strong that there's not a real taste of the practice. And what's lacking is faith and devotion. You might notice that, there might be some of you that might lean in that direction. Really thinking about it more, being curious about it, rather than simply being devoted to it. And oppositely, if there's just simply a lot of faith and devotion, a lot of times, there's an ability to engage in the practice, but there's not the curiosity about, what's really going on right now? What is this? And as a result of that, then there can be a lack of clarity in the practice. Again, you might want to become curious, where do you land in terms of this balance? So faith, these are the two qualities that I want to point out. So it's like falling in love in one sense, and then it also has this flavor of confidence. These are the flavors of faith or devotion that are there. I want to talk a little bit also about what faith is not, what it isn't, because I feel like this is really important. There's a story of one of the Buddha's monks, Vakali, and he became ill once, and he requested to have the Buddha come visit him. And really all he wanted to do was to gaze upon the Buddha with adoration. And it was quite fascinating to hear the Buddha's response to this. He actually admonished Vakali for having this sentiment. He said, really what it is to see me, if you want to see me, you have to come to see the Dharma. Whoever sees the Dharma sees me. So instead of having this quality of faith being this sense of adoration or simply devotion to a person, it's really about having devotion to a practice, to a path that leads to insight. And it is through that one really sees the Buddha, that one can have a devotion and adoration to the Buddha. It's very different than what we find in some other spiritual traditions where sometimes that's the focal point, is just that simple faithful quality towards, a god or a being. Whereas here it's really about insight, coming to see things how they are. So it's not about adoration. Also, faith is different from hope. Hope has an expectation within it. Actually, it sometimes, probably often, actually always carries some quality of anxiety to it. So in some ways, this path isn't about the hope that things will even work out. Hope is something quite different. Now, many times, and you might notice this, I think all of us sometimes come to this practice with all these different ideas, these projections, as I was talking about, just like, when we fall in love. And one of those is that sometimes we hope. We hope that we're going to find something stable and secure. something that we can rely on. Something solid to stand on. Yet actually, this path is taking us in a very different direction. In some ways, what we're beginning to learn is learn how to be in this world that is so unstable, that is so insecure, that we actually can't rely on. Yet many times, even in our practice, we'll have this subtle hope that maybe one of these moments, maybe one of these times, we'll really find that thing that's so solid, that's so secure, that we can really rely on. And I think this is what we begin to see in our meditation, is this quality of impermanence, of unreliability. What is life like, or what is it like to start to be with that, with this groundless quality of our experience? And that direction is much different than hoping for something. Do you hear the difference there? Yeah, to stand, to be in the world without needing to stand on some solid ground. One of the ways that we can explore this is because I think this is one place that we can see this activity of hope. Is, some problem comes up in our lives. It arises in our life, some issue. Many times there's a hope to fix it or a hope to find resolution, right? We'd like to have this resolved because it has this feeling of instability around it. What's it like just to be with that feeling? Rather than fix it or solve it right away, simply to be with it as it is. That's really the direction that we're trying to go with this practice, be with things as they are, so we can see them much more deeply. Then we can start to have a different relationship to all the experiences in our lives. Seneca said, "You cease to be afraid when you cease to hope. For hope is accompanied by fear." Right? We need to let go of hope on this path, because this path really isn't about getting something. It's really much more about letting go. Letting go and opening up. It's about realizing. Waking up. So I want to speak a little bit more how faith actually, in some ways, destabilizes the world that we live in, and how important this is on the path to waking up. And there's I'm sure you know of him, Thomas Merton, who is a Benedictine monk, who speaks about this quality of faith. And he speaks about it in a really fascinating way. I mean, he's in some ways looking at the more difficult aspects of really devoting ourselves to a spiritual practice, but really some really important points he's making. And he uses this word contemplation, and I'm equating the word contemplation with this practice of meditation, coupled together with ethical conduct. He says, "Let no one hope to find in contemplation an escape from conflict, from anguish, or from doubt. On the contrary, the deep, inexpressible certitude of the contemplative experience awakens a tragic anguish and opens many questions in the depths of the heart, like wounds that cannot stop bleeding. For every gain in deep certitude, there is a corresponding growth of superficial, quote-unquote, doubt. This doubt is by no means opposed to genuine faith, but it mercilessly examines and questions the spurious faith of everyday life, the human faith, which is nothing but the passive acceptance of conventional opinion." Do you hear what he's getting at with this deep devotion or this deep faith to a spiritual path? The doubt he's talking about? what he's saying is that when we really commit ourselves, when we really devote ourselves to a spiritual path, what begins to happen is we start to doubt many of the what he calls conventional opinions that are surrounding us, that we've kind of ingested. We come to doubt those, not doubting the spiritual path, but those other values that we find around us. I'm sure you've noticed that. You know, doing this practice can leave a sense of doubt about some of the values that you find around you, you know, within the culture that you find yourself in, within the society that you find yourself in. You might get a sense that, you know, the ideas around success in the society around you sound a bit crazy. So on this external, you know, front, we could say that there's this doubt, which is really important. Doubt in the sense of having a different view of the values that we find around us. But it can be much deeper than that, or much closer to home. I mean, sometimes we can begin to question the way we relate to our experience. We might have had a past of having this feeling that something's missing in me, or that I'm incomplete in some way, and the best way to deal with that is by distracting myself or filling up that feeling. Right? And when we come to do this practice, we can see all we need to do is simply be with that. So we come to doubt this past habit with this internal feeling. Right? And again, some of you might have had an experience like that, where you've had this relationship to some feeling or an emotion, and the more you practice, you begin to doubt that past way of relating to that feeling or that emotion. Actually, I just led a retreat this last weekend in Flagstaff, and there was a fellow on that really, I think, had a poignant insight into the way he was living his life, which I think really speaks to what Thomas Merton's speaking about. After, you know, it was just a 2-day sit, and I think on the second day, I met with him the day afterwards, and he said, yeah, I really came to see how, you know, whenever I have this feeling of really dropping into really touching the direct experience of what's going on right now, you know, that spacious quality that can come with that, this mind fills it up with all kinds of thoughts, unnecessary thoughts. And really, that was his experience, is that there was this habit, he said, of mind, a habit of mind that would fill up the space of his experience with unnecessary thinking. And when he was able to clearly see this habit of mind, what really started to happen is that started to drop away, where he could really touch experience. So again, it was really coming to quote-unquote doubt that was not necessary for him. Probably what had happened is that's what his mind was comfortable with, right? You know, as they say, so many times our mind much more prefers the certainty of misery, right? than rather the certainty of something new, the uncertainty of something new. But what it requires is this doubt, at least the way that Thomas Merton's using that one. And again, faith and devotion allows this to arise. The other thing that faith is not, which is really important, you know, there are many beliefs even within Buddhism that we take on in a sense. We believe something and then we work with it. Maybe, for example, you know, the idea that our actions have consequences. It's a belief, and then the more we practice, we get a sense, oh, it is true. My actions have consequences. So I'm going to be skillful in the actions that I perform as a result of that. So we come to verify that. But it's important to see that this really isn't a system of some kind of fixed beliefs. This is not about some kind of fixed view. That's not what this quality of faith is about. Faith really is more this openness. It really allows us to stay open. When you look at a lot of these teachings, especially in terms of the meditation, the really being with what is. It really is this having this quality of being open, this openness. I think this goes very deeply and important to remember, especially in the meditation. So many times there can be some kind of experience in meditation where you think, oh, that's it, I've got it. And whenever our mind says, that's it, we know we're off. Right? Because what's happened? There's all of a sudden this fixed view. Oh, I got it. And then there's this fixing of that experience. Faith is leading us beyond that. So what do we have faith in? What are we devoted to on this path? Actually, it really speaks back to what I spoke about during my residency. I gave talks on the threefold refuge that is so important in this practice. So I just want to review that a little bit, because that's usually where our faith is going, is directed towards. So having faith, for example, the first refuge is taking refuge in the Buddha. Having faith in the Buddha, which the way I explained it was really having faith in our ability to wake up and how important that is and how often we doubt that awakening is for somebody else. So it's having faith, it's having devotion in our potential, our ability to wake up. And it's also having faith and devotion to wakefulness itself. What is it to devote ourselves and to have faith in that quality of being awake to what's going on right now? Devote ourselves to that. And then having faith in the Dharma, on one level, it really is beginning to have faith in this tradition, in these teachings. Being willing to try them on and to see what direction they lead. I think that's very important. To study the tradition, to get a taste of it. And then on a deeper level, taking refuge in the Dharma is taking refuge in the way things are. Not how we want them to be, but how they are. What's it like to take refuge just in your experience right now, to have faith in that what's going on right now will give you, you know, what you need to know for what's next. Having faith that simply being receptive to what's going on right now will lead us in the right direction. And again, it's this process of first having trust in that and then getting a taste of it and verifying it and then deepening that faith. So really having faith in our immediate direct experience. And then lastly, it's having faith in Sangha, which just very briefly, it's devoting ourselves to some community, some spiritual community, and coming to rely on the support of that community. Having faith in that. Having the faith in working with a community and all the imperfections that come with being in a community. So again, I feel like that's really important. And I find it actually really striking that the Buddha was encouraging us to have faith in a community. You don't find that a lot in spiritual traditions. So many times it's some kind of deity. But having faith in community, I think there's something very striking and important about that. So now I want to share with you just, how to put it, kind of the power of faith, the things that can come out of devotion and faith. First of all, a story. There's a very common story that you find in Tibetan Buddhism. It's about a woman who was very devoted to the practice, and she had a son who was continually making trips to India. And each time he made a trip to India, she would say to his son, "Please bring me back a Buddha relic. I want a relic of the Buddha." And each time he came back, he had forgotten. She'd go. She'd remind him. He'd forget. He'd come back. Yeah. And then I think she got very upset. I think she threatened that she would kill herself if you didn't bring something back. Create a little anxiety in his son. So he goes to India and he comes back and he forgets. Can you believe it? But luckily, he's coming close to the house and he looks down and there is this tooth from a dog. Boy. So he feels really kind of saved at the last moment. So he gives his mother this tooth from some dog. And she is so pleased. You know, because this is a Buddha relic. And she spends years doing devotional practices around this relic. It's phenomenal. And as a result of that, actually, she comes to a very deep realization, to a very deep awakening around a dog tooth. And it's said that actually, through her devotional practices, that dog tooth became the tooth of the Buddha, right? I love that story on so many different levels. I mean, I think that faith has the power to transform. It has the power to transform us in the sense of giving us a taste of liberation at some depth. And it literally has the power to transform the world around us, to give the world that we live in a taste of liberation. And what's needed is not some relic, it's that quality of devotion. It's that quality of really falling in love. I want to speak about, you know, more about maybe how this happens, some benefits from this. One is which I mentioned earlier, I think it can really help break down the sense of me doing the practice. I'm doing the practice, and it can really start to give us this quality of surrendering to the path, which I feel is so important. Because that's a real false notion. I am practicing. I am doing this, right? This is one of the things that we want to start to see through. One of these deluded projections that we bring to falling in love with the Dharma. I'm doing it. And when we surrender, when we really have faith and devotion, it allows us to go beyond that, to get a sense of going beyond me doing the practice or I'm getting somewhere. You find at times in the history of Buddhism a real emphasis on this. For example, in Shin Buddhism, which really flowered in Japan, Shinran, who is the founder of Shin Buddhism, spoke about other power. What he was seeing, especially in the Zen tradition, was this quality of practice of I'm waking up, that I'm doing it. And as a result, he started to talk about, well, actually, there's no way that you can do it because whoever you are could never come to any kind of deep realization. So it's really about giving oneself over to other power, the power of the other. And I think the importance of such a teaching is to really undermine the sense that I'm doing it. And it can instill a deeper sense of faith and devotion. I know, and the other interesting thing about Tibetan Buddhism or many of the practices is that, you know, many times they talk about waking up, that awakening happens simply because of the blessings that one has gained. That it's through all these devotional practices, really devoting oneself to the practice. And through that, what begins to happen is there's enough blessings that one comes to see the fundamental nature of reality. And again, I think there's something really important about that conceptualization of the practice, of really getting out of the way, and that I don't really have to understand the whole thing. It's really devoting myself to simply doing it. I know for me that was really important, especially when I went to Burma. When I first went to Burma, I decided to do this retreat with Saito Upandita, who I'd heard all kinds of horror stories about. He was a teacher there. And I was speaking with a friend who had spent quite a long time in Burma. And it was so nice to hear from him. Yeah, all you need to do is sit and walk and sit and walk. That's your job, and the Dharma will take care of the rest. That's all it is when you're on retreat. Simply be mindful, and then the Dharma will unfold. And that was some of the most important instruction that I ever got in my meditation practice, because it allowed me really just to simply give myself over just to this, the simple practice and how simple it is, and to allow it to unfold. It allowed me to really cultivate simple faith and devotion into sitting meditation and walking meditation, nothing else. It made it a lot easier to set aside all those doubts and those thoughts and why this and how does this work, and simply do it. So in that sense, faith allows us to go through the, you know, allows us to go beyond the personal, to something much beyond that, a different relationship to the Dharma, and a different relationship to our experience. Another benefit of having faith and devotion in this practice is that so many times there can be this thought or this, more this doubt, you know, is this the way it's supposed to be? You know, we have some idea of the way meditation should unfold, or the way that this practice should unfold. And it's so nice to simply have faith in the practice and allow it to unfold however it should go. And again, I think that does take a deep amount of faith, because there's so many things that can arise on this path. So many wonderful things and so many difficult things. And the other thing that faith allows us is it allows us to be imperfect. We don't have to know everything. It allows us to make mistakes, and we simply need to devote ourselves again to the practice. It's so important. Because again, one of the things that sometimes we might be going for in this practice is some kind of perfection. There's something off about that. In a poem called Faith in Mind, it's actually a poem that's read very often in the Zen tradition, there's this wonderful quote that I'd like to end with that really speaks to the importance of this. And again, it's about faith, and it's about the realization that arises from having faith in some path. It said, to live in this realization, to live in awakening, is to be without anxiety about non-perfection. I find that so striking. A very striking way of giving voice to what it is to wake up. So may we all live without anxiety about non-perfection. So I wonder if there's any questions or comments or any thoughts that you want to share about faith and devotion or anything else.
Could you repeat that last thing that you read?
To live in this realization is to be without anxiety about non-perfection. About that it's not me doing the practice, or?
Yeah, you had used the word, it is a great power. Instead of the I, you use something else.
I was talking about, in Shin Buddhism, they talk about other power, and it's giving yourself over to other power. And he was talking about Amida Buddha, which is just this Buddha and giving yourself over to other power. And so it has actually a devotional aspect that you'd find in something centered around a deity. The reason why I feel like it's an important teaching is more that it can get us out of the sense of I'm doing the practice. I think the more we engage in the practice, I think it, for me at least, it really is the sense of being led or just following, of really allowing something to carry the mind along rather than I'm doing it. I think that, yeah. So that's the reason why I talked about that teaching in particular. And it was in response to a lot of Buddhist practice that was emphasizing, I need to do it, I need to get it. And in a sense, also I think it's important because when I'm doing the practice, there's no way that I can come to any kind of realization or awakening. Because awakening, in essence, is beyond my understanding, my personal understanding. There's no way I can touch it from my personal perspective. So in order to get a taste of awakening, that has to be dropped. That has to be let go of. And that's why having devotion is so important, because that's going to help drop that. And just one more thing, I think that's why blessings are so emphasized in Tibetan Buddhism, because I think they see something silly in the sense of, I'm going to understand that. You're going to understand, the fundamental nature of reality? Wow. That's a serious delusion. And it's a common delusion, especially in this culture of rugged individualism. I'm going to engage in this practice, and I'm going to wake up. And then I'm going to be this great awakened person. Right? And something funny about that.
It sounds to me like what Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche called spiritual materialism. Is that kind of part of writing?
Yeah, it's that quality of, and it's also that. I mean, that comes in all different kinds of forms. Where we, and also that's the thing of when we have a fixed view. Oh, that's it. I'm going to have that experience. It's me doing it. Yeah. I wish I brought this quote. I think some of you are really familiar with it, but very often there's a quote from something called the Kalama Sutta, which is a discourse that the Buddha gave to the Kalamas, where the Kalamas were these group of people that were in great doubt about who to believe. And the Buddha, which is very often quoted, talks about, don't go by oral tradition or by reasoning or by logic, but go by, your own experience. And that's what will lead you to what really is true. But actually, he doesn't just say that, which is interesting. He says, go by your own experience, but also by the words of the wise people that you find around you. So it's not just about this rugged individualism. It is, relying on others, giving ourselves over to, some other kind of support, to the teaching. So we are relying on something also outside of us, which I think is important. And I find it interesting that the way that sutta has been talked about so many times is really as this treatise on that emphasizes rugged individualism, which I don't think is what the Buddha was talking about. I might not understand what you're asking, so please correct me. So I'm going to talk about it in terms of meditation, and then, but I don't know if this is going to be it. In terms of meditation, sometimes when there's a lot of faith and not a lot of discernment, the mind's quite dull, so it's not really seeing really the details of experience. So a lot of times what can help increase the quality of investigation is really this this quality of mind that's asking, what is this? So it's almost, it's not verbally asking that, but it's that quality of, you know, if I ask you, what is this? You'll notice that there's this, almost this curiosity in the mind that comes, but before you say it's a bell. So there's this openness that's there. That's the quality investigation that can help balance out faith. Is that what you're asking, or are you talking more in terms of like studying things? Or
well, that fits in there, what you just said. Studying is love. Kind of just that, the focus, like a conceptual focus. And that effort seems like it's a lot tighter than just kind of being with experience. But to me, that's how I kind of understand what discrimination, the definition would be.
Yeah. It's having in terms of reading stuff, it'd be having a curiosity about the teachings. But once that curiosity comes to a point where we're frozen in the questions that we're asking, why is this way? Why is it this way? How is it supposed to be this way? But there's so many questions that we're not really engaging in touching our experience. Then we know that there's too much of that curiosity, you could say. There needs to be more faith than just going ahead. So that might be one way of balancing out in terms of what we're reading. Thank you.